Last week we studied the first five verses of the Gospel of John, chapter 1, which describe the one who was before the beginning and who is the Word, the life, and the light of men. Today we focus on an even more amazing fact, that this light was coming into the world. We learn that God has sent a person to prepare us. John chapter 1, verses 6, 7, and 8. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. May all believe.
Good morning. So, who are you? That's a question that follows you wherever you go, that you have to reckon with, and yet it's not an easy question to answer. If after the service is over, I come up to you and I just say, "Who are you?" like I expect you to give me an answer, what would you say? We'll get there. That's next week. You could tell me your name, right? But obviously I'm asking for more than that. You could tell me what your roles are. I'm a student, I'm a teacher, I'm a husband, I'm a wife. You could give me your resume or your history. But the whole time, we would both know that you're just nibbling around the edges of the answer. That you're not really getting to the heart of who you are. The reason that simple and important question is so hard to answer is because you're not meant to come up with the answer yourself. You are not meant to define you. You are sort of an old wooden footbridge, and the responsibility of defining your own identity is a dump truck filled with gravel headed your way. And we know what will happen, and so we go out there and we put up a sign that says, "Road closed, detour, ask me some other question." But the question remains, who are you? And if it's, we're not going to create the answer, if it's not us who defines us, then how do we understand who we are? In this text, in these verses that Laura read for us, we learn about John the Baptist. And I'm going to try and keep this straight. John the author uses John the Baptist as a sort of ideal human being, non-Jesus division, right? So Jesus is the ideal human being, right? But Jesus is kind of Superman, right? He transcends us. He's from before the beginning of all worlds. He's the one who saves us. You're not going to grow up to be Jesus. John the Baptist is not Superman. John the Baptist is more Mr. Rogers. He's up there. It's a high standard, but you could actually, in theory, grow up to be Mr. Rogers. So John the Baptist stands in as who you could be, as who you are meant to be. And so by writing about John the Baptist, John the author is endeavoring to show us who we are, to give us the answer to that question. And he shows us that we matter. That we matter, but Jesus matters more. And that we matter because Jesus matters more. You matter. You matter, but not as much as Jesus. And you matter because Jesus matters more than you do. Okay, so first, who are you? You're someone who matters. Verse 6, there was a man sent from God whose name was John. Right there in that simple sentence, we're going to see you matter for two reasons. First, you have a particular identity. And second, you have a weighty purpose. All that's right there in verse 6. Okay, so first reason, you matter because you have a particular identity. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. And remember, John's standing in for all of us as we're meant to be. Do you realize that in the prologue, in these first 18 verses of John's gospel, neither Jesus nor God the Father are mentioned by name? But John is. John is named. What that means for you is God knows your name. You might have great difficulty answering the question, who am I? But God has no trouble with it at all. He can describe you in perfect and loving detail. You matter to God. Who you are is significant to God on high. There's all kinds of little hints of this throughout the scripture, especially in the really boring parts of scripture. If you ever try to read the whole Bible, there are these interminable lists of names. There's a list of names at the beginning of the book of Chronicles that is 9 chapters long. Right, you get genealogies, you get every person who ever served in the temple, apparently. Paul tends to end his letters with these long lists of names, people he just wants to say hello to. And at least for me, reading them can be kind of tedious because I don't know any of these people. Their names don't mean anything to me. But God put them in his word because as insignificant as they seem to us, every single one of them matters to God. He knows their names. He never gets tired of reading them. He knows your name. He never gets tired of attending to you. You have a particular identity. God knows your name. You matter to him. Therefore, you matter. That's the first reason. The second reason you matter is that you have a weighty purpose. Verse 6 describes John as being sent from God. If you're sent somewhere, then you have a purpose. Okay, if I just go to Winco on my own, then maybe I wander around the aisles aimlessly and find myself at the checkout counter with nothing but like eggs and turnips and 3 cartons of Tillamook ice cream. But if Vanessa sends me to Winco, if I am sent, then I have a purpose. I have a real reason for being there. And woe betide me if I don't get the Honey Bunches of Oats with almonds. And the right kind of toilet paper, not just any toilet paper. And navel oranges, but only if they're less than $1 a pound. Being sent means having a purpose. If you are sent into this life, then you have a purpose. Life doesn't tend to feel that way. It can often feel much more random than that, as if we just kind of landed here. And we wake up in the morning not really understanding where we are or why we are where we are and just kind of pick a direction. I think I'll have lunch at American Dream today. I'd like to read a novel this week. This year I resolved to do more hiking. We just kind of choose and go. But you weren't thrown randomly into life. You were sent. Your life has a purpose, and your life has a weighty purpose, right? Your purpose is not the Honey Bunches of Oats with almonds. It matters much more than that. And the reason I know that is because this language, there was a man sent from God, every other time applies to Jesus. It is a weighty sending, a purpose that matters. So that means that your purpose matters in that Jesus' purpose matters, and it means that you are sent into life, formed and shaped by the way that Jesus was sent into the world. Your purpose aligns with his purpose, which is to say, your weighty purpose is to give your life away. That's what you exist for, because that's what Jesus came into the world to do, to give his life away for you. And so as you are sent from God, as Jesus was, you are also sent to give your life away. Now, who exactly you are meant to give your life away for and how exactly that's going to happen, I can't tell you the details of that. Right? There will be a million small ways. Right? A meal cooked or a moment taken with someone or a coat donated or a prayer prayed. There's going to be some huge ways too. A child raised. A sick friend nursed back to health, an enemy forgiven. But finding out the details of how God intends for you to give your life away, well, that's where the adventure lies. And I don't have the script in advance. The point is, you are sent with a purpose. And the beauty of this purpose is that it is circumstance-proof. Right? If your purpose was to further your career and you get fired and you can't get another job, then your purpose has gone away and you're no longer sent. But this purpose of giving your life away, you can do this in any situation. Whether or not you're wealthy, whether or not you're employed, whether or not you're educated, whether or not you're happy, regardless of anything, regardless of your personal history, you can give your life away. You have been sent for a weighty purpose. And that purpose is yours no matter what happens to be going on. Regardless of the circumstances of your life, regardless of your emotional state, you have a weighty purpose. You matter. So you matter because you have a particular identity that matters to God, and you matter because you have been sent for a weighty purpose. You matter. That was the fun part. You matter, but Jesus matters more. If verse 6 conveys how much John and therefore how much we matter, verses 7 and 8 are all about how much more Jesus matters and how important it is for us to recognize how much more Jesus matters. So verses 7 and 8, John came as a witness to bear witness about the light that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but he came to bear witness about the light. Clearly, John came to bear witness, right? Three times in two verses, we hear that John came to bear witness. That's not remarkable, because every human being all the time is bearing witness. In everything we say and do, we bear witness, right? Bearing witness, it means like what you could imagine in court. It means talking about what you have experienced. And we all do that from time to time. But bearing witness also means demonstrating what you value. And we all do that always. If you followed me around with the sound turned off, not hearing a word I said and not being able to read my lips, you could still tell that I value my family and this congregation and books and running and Nutella and all sorts of other important things. I bear witness. And so do you. You're the same. We all bear witness in what we say and in how we live. So I want to stop here for a moment and challenge all of you. This is a helpful exercise whether you came in here as a Christian or not. Take some time this afternoon to sort through, say, the last week of your life. What did you bear witness to? In what you said and in how you lived. What did you value this week? Take a sort of outline diary. This is what I did and what I talked about. And then, okay, what did that bear witness to? What is your testimony, as it were? Okay, so the fact that John is a witness is not remarkable. But the character of John's witness is remarkable. And the character of John's witness can be summed up pretty simply: Jesus matters more than me. I'm not the light. Jesus is the light. Yeah, sure, I matter. But Jesus matters more. Every word John utters and every choice he makes bears witness to the same thing. You can see this in a lot of texts, really every text that refers to John the Baptist in this gospel, and I've listed them for you in the outlines. We're just going to talk about one, John's last words toward the end of chapter 3. So John, he's been teaching people to follow God, and the message has gotten out. And lots of people are coming to him to try to learn from him. They see him as very important. They're treating him like a great prophet, as if he himself is the light. And then all of a sudden, Jesus comes on the scene. And all the people who are crowded around John start running to Jesus. Just like that, John becomes the parent that the children don't prefer. Right? All of a sudden, John is the kid that gets abandoned so that his friend can hang out with the popular kids. Just like that, John is the out-of-fashion pastor of the dwindling church. And some of John's disciples come to him to bring this to his attention as if he might not have noticed, and to ask him, like, what are you going to do about this? How are you going to handle this situation? And this is John's response in verses 28, 29, and 30. "You yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but I have been sent before him. The one who has the bride is the bridegroom. The friend of the bridegroom who stands and hears him rejoices greatly at the bridegroom's voice. Therefore, this joy of mine is now complete. He must increase, and I must decrease." You get, therefore, this joy of mine is now complete. Because all of these people are running away from me. They're treating me like I don't matter anymore, and they're going to Jesus instead. Because of that, I have complete joy. Jesus matters more than me. And the people are getting it. Isn't that exciting? Nobody thinks I'm a big deal anymore. Jesus matters more. That's John's witness. That's meant to be our witness. The testimony of our lives is meant to be, Jesus matters more than me. He matters more than you. He matters more than anyone who's ever lived. There are a couple problems here. A couple things that make this a tough pill to swallow. The first is kind of philosophical. The second is a little more personal. The philosophical problem is this. We've built kind of all of our moral thinking on the idea that no one matters more than anyone else. That everybody matters the same. And we understand how dangerous it is when people start to think that they matter more than other people. That's how you get bullies. That's how you get settlers and Native Americans. That's how you get the Holocaust. And so we're very leery of saying that somebody matters more. And we're also aware, Christians, be honest here, that it is a short, slippery slope from Jesus matters more than me to because I follow Jesus, I matter more than you. History bears that out. So we have a philosophical problem. The thing is, you can only travel down that slippery slope if you never understood where you were starting from. You can only get to, because I follow Jesus, I matter more than you, if you never grasped in the first place, Jesus matters more than me. If you turned that into, Jesus helps me matter more. Right? You can see this in John. There's no hint anywhere, at any point in John's career, that he viewed himself as better than the people he was talking to, as more significant. And if we will, like John, really grasp how much more Jesus matters than us, then there will be no room in us for being judgmental towards other people, because we will be filled up with being grateful to Jesus that he would pay any attention to us in the first place. So our philosophical problem is only a problem if Jesus is never involved. That's the philosophical problem. The personal problem, the second problem, is the more persistent, the more pernicious of the two. And it has to do with us. Look, we all possess a natural bent towards living as if we matter most. I mean, we matter. We went over this, and every day of our lives, there we are, And so it's pretty easy to start treating ourselves as if we matter most. The default testimony of your life, if you go back, you do that exercise and examine the last week, and you haven't been working at this already, the testimony is going to be, I must increase. My wealth, my career, my education, my comfort, my sense of satisfaction, my control, my contribution, my range of experience, these must increase. That's the natural testimony of the human heart. Ernest Kurtz wrote the history of the Alcoholics Anonymous movement, and he titled the history two words, not God. And he said he did that because the fundamental obstacle that every addict has to overcome is not the biochemistry. The fundamental thing they have to do is acknowledge that they aren't God. That what they want doesn't matter most. You and I and every other person ever to live other than Jesus were born addicted to self. No one had to teach you to live as if you mattered most. You came out of the womb with a PhD in that. John is an example of a person who overcame that addiction. I pray that we will be too. That we'll be able to say, yes, we matter. But Jesus matters more. He's God. We are not. Earlier, I laid out that challenge to examine your own life and figure out what your witness is. At this point, I want to sharpen it, particularly for the Christians in the room. So add this question to the general challenge, which is, have you been a testimony to the greatness of Jesus in what you have said and done this week? Have you been a testimony to the greatness of Jesus in what you have said and done this week? And I'm going to be nicer than your professors. I'll go ahead and give you the answer. No. There are lots of varieties of the word no in this case, but that's the right answer. None of us have done this well. We've all fallen short of bearing witness consistently to how much Jesus matters. The beauty here is that both your strengths and your weaknesses, your successes and your failures, can bear witness to the greatness of Jesus. You don't have to be perfect to do this. It's better if you aren't. Let me show you this. Vanessa and I serve as foster parents, and we tend to get admiration for that. Right? People say, wow, that's great. Okay, and so we can either take that strength of ours and just let it bear witness to us. And to just help. Or we can turn around and say why we do it in the first place. That we take children into our home because first God took us into His. Our strength can bear witness to us. And if we don't do anything deliberate, it will. Or even our strength can bear witness to Jesus. Our strength can say, yeah, we matter and the work that we're doing matters, but Jesus matters more. The same is true of our weakness. Okay. You know, so maybe deciding to be foster parents is a strength. Just believe me when I say that the day-to-day reality leaves plenty of opportunity for failure. I lose my patience. I lose my temper. I fail again and again to love these kids the way that they really need to be loved, to have the kind of compassion that they need, consistently. Now, when that happens, it can just bear witness about me, right? It can, and it does. It can make me defensive, right? I mean, at least I'm trying. It can make me self-loathing, right? Like, what kind of despicable human being can't have compassion for this kid? Or my very failure can be the occasion of pointing away from myself entirely, entirely, and toward Jesus, and toward God, who loves me without hesitation, with endless patience. And even where I screw up, can bear witness to Jesus. Yes, I matter, and so my failures cause real pain to real people who have more than enough pain in their lives already. Thanks be to God that Jesus matters more. You matter, but Jesus matters more. So, knowing that whatever you do, your life is going to bear witness about something, will you bear witness to Jesus? In your mind, in your words, in your life, will you proclaim, "Yes, I matter. Jesus matters more." The natural way to hear that sentence, "I matter, but Jesus matters more," is in terms of rivalry. Because only one person can matter more. And so it sounds like Jesus is coming to claim your turf. Like there's an election happening for the office of the president of you, and somebody other than you is running. And so we can set up walls and keep Jesus at bay because of that sense of rivalry. And there, I want to be honest, there is some truth here. If Jesus increases, there will be a real sense in which you decrease. The word witness that gets used again and again and again to describe John and hopefully to describe us is the word martyr. Somebody who gives their life for something other than themselves. And you really will end up giving your life. Jesus is open about this. But there's a deeper truth here. A more important and more lasting truth in this dynamic that isn't born out of our natural sense of rivalry, but out of Jesus' love. And that truth is that you matter because Jesus matters more. That your mattering is not pitted against Jesus like two cars racing one another, but that you derive your significance, your identity, and your purpose from Jesus, the way that a tree planted next to a stream draws water from the stream to feed its own life and growth. You matter because Jesus matters more. Certainly this is true of John. Right? If John had lived his life and his more famous and more significant cousin Jesus had never come along, there is zero chance that we're talking about John this morning. Or if Jesus had come along and John had interpreted things in terms of rivalry. Yeah, I see him increasing, but I need to increase more. Perhaps we'd be talking about John, but it wouldn't be as an example. It would be as a cautionary tale. It is only in Jesus mattering more and John acknowledging that Jesus matters more that John matters so much. He matters because Jesus matters more, and you are meant to be the same. To find an ever-growing dignity, or an ever more solid and unassailable identity and purpose in the transcendent dignity and identity and purpose of Jesus. You are supposed to matter because he matters more. Now, how does that actually work? How does it come about? It works through Jesus' identity and purpose. I need you to stay with me for 3 minutes while I become deeply nerdy about the Bible. And then, hopefully, it will be clear. Okay? So, John's gospel that we're reading starts with the prologue, which is 18 verses long, and it's kind of a high-level summary of everything that's going to come. And of those 18 verses, 14 are perfect. Absolutely flawless in what they say and how they say it. The theology and the literature of 14 of these verses is just exquisite. And then there are four verses about John the Baptist that do not belong. They don't fit. I know you're looking at me like I'm crazy because I'm criticizing the Bible, but hang in there. So take verses 1 to 5. All about the Word. And the Word is Jesus, right? Describing who the Word is and what he has done and culminating in how the Word comes into the world to renew the world, right? The light shines in the darkness and the darkness has not overcome it. And through verses 1 through 5, Jesus, remember, has not been named. And then verse 6 begins, there was a man sent from God whose name was... Who's supposed to go there? Jesus belongs there at the end of that sentence. Jesus is the man sent from God. Everything before is about Jesus. Everything after is about Jesus. What is John doing there? Or the other time that John shows up in the prologue is verse 15. Let me read you right before and after verse 15. This is glorious. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth, and from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The law, it was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. You know why that sounds so good? Because I skipped over the John the Baptist part. Right there in the middle, verse 15. John, it's even in parentheses in your text. John bore witness about him and cried out, "This is he of whom I said, he who comes after me ranks before me because he was before me." We already covered that. That was in verse 1. So why is John even here? Why can't we just have the prologue be about the perfect life of God and then get to John the Baptist afterwards? What's happening, it's not that John the author didn't know how to write or that he fired his editor at the wrong time. The author, he's constructing the prologue as a sort of visual aid to show how God brings us into his life. Okay? And it's meant to be jarring. It's meant to be awkward. My favorite movie is The Shawshank Redemption. And The Shawshank is about, it's a prison movie about maintaining hope in the darkest circumstances. If you think of the prologue as Shawshank, then the John the Baptist verses are meant to sound terrible. It's meant to be like Andy's in the middle of one of his wonderful monologues about the glory of hope, and then the director just cut to a Bud Light commercial. That's the effect John is trying to create, because that's what's happening here. God is perfect. The life of God that exists in the Father, the Son, and the Spirit is perfect. It's complete. It lacks nothing. And yet God includes us, who are not perfect, who have nothing good to add, because everything good is already there. And yet God includes us. He doesn't need anything from us. And yet just as the verses about John are crammed into the prologue, so we are drawn in to the life of God for no other reason than that God loves us, than that God has decided to know our names. We matter because God matters, and God has decided we matter to him. You matter because Jesus matters more. It's so important that you get the beauty of what God is offering here. It's so important that you get that having Jesus matter more than you is not some burden that you have to bear through life, but instead is the lifting of the burden of trying to come up with your own identity and make your own meaning. Think of you as like the planet Earth. Okay, if you're most important, if you matter most, if you're the biggest, baddest celestial object in the area, fine, great. You get to hurtle through the darkness of space forever. But if the vastly greater glory of Jesus operates for you like the sun, and you orbit around him who matters more than you, if you let him determine your path, carve a way for you through the heavens, then the light of his face will bring you to life. Then the minerals and nutrients of your soul, then the oxygen of your heart will bring forth all sorts of forms of life, and you will get to give yourself away. You matter because Jesus matters more. Or if we are all sailors, and we all get to matter most in our own little boats, great, congratulations, we're all stuck in little one-person rowboats in the middle of the Pacific. And yes, maybe we get a few lovely days on the waves, and yes, you absolutely get to decide which direction you want to go. You are free in that sense. But you're not making it to land. You're dying exhausted at sea. But if you will accept that as much as you matter, Jesus matters more. That he is the captain of your faith, that he is the master of your soul, that he is the true and rightful leader of a sailing ship who invites you on board to be a part of his crew. And you will take your orders from him day in and day out, then you will know what it is to harness the wind. To be led through every storm and every doldrum to safe harbor. You matter because Jesus matters more. This is high and lofty, and I hope it grabs your imagination. It's also really practical. It will also get you through everyday life. Consider John one more time. John was a community leader. And let me tell you, as a community leader, it is very normal to find your identity in the community, in whether or not the community is thriving and growing or not. But John is immune to that. When we see him in chapter 1, his community is exploding. Things are growing. Everyone admires him. The experts are coming to consult him. And John is not in the least bit puffed up or impressed with himself. His ego does not distract him from bearing witness to Jesus. And then in chapter 3, the reverse is happening, right? John's community is coming apart at the seams. Everyone's abandoning him and treating him like he doesn't matter. And he doesn't fall into the least bit of despair. He rejoices because he knows that Jesus matters more. If you will find your identity in Jesus, if you will understand how much more Jesus matters to you, then you will be set free from the ups and downs of life. Then you can, in the words of Rudyard Kipling, look on triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same. I don't know what your metric is. This week, maybe it's exam grades. In a couple of weeks, maybe it's putting on the perfect family Christmas gathering, or maybe it's happy children, or getting to travel, whatever. It can be a perfectly good metric, but if your identity is in the metric, then every success will make you insufferable to the rest of us, and every failure will cripple you with despair. But if your identity is not in the metric at all, but in Jesus, then you're free to enjoy both the successes and to learn from the failures. You're released from the intolerable burden of creating your own identity out of thin air, of making meaning of your own. And you get to follow Jesus. You get to say, Jesus made room in his life for me. He knows my name. That's why I matter. Because Jesus matters more. Jesus won't be the rival who seeks to take away your life. Jesus will be the son that gives you life as you orbit around him. He won't be the one leading a mutiny on your little rowboat. He'll be the captain who teaches you to sail, to participate in his life. You will be set free. You will matter because Jesus matters more. And when someone asks you, who are you? You'll be ready with Janet's answer. I'm someone Jesus loves. And that is enough. And that is more than enough. Bear witness to that. Bear witness to Jesus. Let's pray. Lord, thank you. Thank you that you matter infinitely more than us, and thank you that from you we really do receive grace upon grace, a whole new identity and purpose, that we are not your rivals, that instead we are your children, that we matter because you matter more. Help us, Lord, to bear witness to you. And in everything, in our successes and failures, our triumphs and disasters, help us to bear witness to you. You're worthy of it.